This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Buenaderas, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, not of any organization with which we have been, are, or will be affiliated.
Episode 26, Business Process Management and Immortality, was recorded Friday, the 2nd of November, 2012.
Hello and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I'm sitting right here next to my co-host, Phaedra Buenaderas, and I'm so glad to be doing this in person.
In person, from Hungary. He flies over just to do this show with me, right?
That's exactly right. Well, you and Michael, but unfortunately, Michael is down for the count. He is out sick today, and we're missing him, which would have been super awesome if we had all three of us at once.
I know, it would have. We hope you feel better, Michael.
Yes, we certainly do. So we have an interesting discussion point here, and I think one that goes back to some of Phaedra's roots in the gaming space and clicks into some of the things that I've been talking about here recently and meeting with others, which is on business process management and the interaction and intersection between those concepts and game and game mechanics. So, you know, Phaedra, I'm remembering, this is back when I think we first met, way back when.
I don't even remember when we first met anymore.
Yeah, I don't remember the precise circumstances either, but there was a situation where I went out west to, I think it was Boulder, and I was part of a conference or an event where we had a movie theater, there was a video that was played using the characters from Innovate. And after it was done in the movie theater, the customers got popcorn and they got drinks and they watched the movie. And then we had a panel of experts to talk about business process modeling and business process management. And then your role around this was the Innovate game itself, right?
Yes.
So let's help the audience understand the nature of that game, because you know, IBM. Well, I mean, this is something that you had done for IBM. We don't usually use first-person shooter kind of technology.
Certainly not with business process management in mind.
No, I mean, but the avatars and the integration. Help our audience understand some of the things you did there.
Well, it actually, the idea got germinated through a competition between UNC and Duke.
Ooh, Duke.
And at the time, I was getting my MBA at UNC, and I love to do these competitions called case competitions, where in essence, a business will go to a business school with a real life challenge, and the students have overnight to pitch a solution.
Right.
So IBM came and they said they had business process management software and they were looking for innovative ways of explaining it to non-techies.
Right.
And at the time, I had no idea what business process management was, but they handed a stack of cases. And as you're reading it, you know, you're reading the description of what this has done for organizations. The idea that any organization that creates any kind of a service or product, there's a certain set of steps that organization needs to take in order to meet certain goals associated with that service or product. And mm-hmm. You associate certain rules in order to meet those goals. So I read this and I thought this could be a game.
Sure.
The idea of, you know, let me see if I can turn these dials in a certain way as to hit these levels or certain markers, you know, whether it's profitability, customer satisfaction, carbon emissions, and be able to get that kind of instant feedback. You could have competing models, you could collaborate around a model, compete against the market. And so we ended up creating that first Innovate game using, again, a 3D first-person shooter gaming engine at the time because, you know,
It was quick, too.
It was quick. We could rapidly prototype. It happened to be cheap. So, minus the guns.
Yes.
And we created a game where you're a consultant that's being dropped into a call center environment and you're being told by your CEO you've got overnight. You've got to have the pressure.
Yeah, to fix the problem.
Fix it. Find out, you know, what's wrong with their current process. How is it that you can change the rules to try and hit these major goals for the organization?
Yep.
So we created this and we cranked it out for IBM's academic initiative and we made it freely available to schools worldwide.
And it was adopted by thousands of schools in
yes.
the end, wasn't it?
Within the first 6 months, we had well over 1,000 universities using it as part of their core curriculum to teach business process management to students. And when we interviewed the professors, they were saying, you know, the act of being able to do using this kind of a game really clinched the whole idea of what this could mean for an organization. And it gave the players the vocabulary they needed to really understand what this could do in terms of helping an organization meet profitability goals or try and hit any kind of goals that they might have.
The environmental sustainability goals and to balance, you know, the speed at which things were going to happen. And it was a risk-free environment because you could twiddle the dials whichever way you wanted to see what happened.
That's the idea. That's mm-hmm. the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so when we talk about concepts like institutional memory, right, and we think about the various workforces and folks that are retiring, you know, people that know the business for 30 plus years, being able for those folks to convey to the next generation of people that are coming on what is happening in the business, explaining them through rules like this, business rules, that people can actually understand, you know, not SQL statements, not decisions like that, but actual business rules is really where I've seen the process modeling kind of environment evolve since the time, you know, we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it so much easier for people through natural language, really, to say, you know, this is how the process of creating a new product, this is how the process of procuring a component, this is how the process of hiring a new person actually takes place and connects the dots.
Mm-hmm.
What I like so much about this is that it's the gaming technologies, right? So, you know, being able to take the first person shooter kind of example here again and repurpose it in a way that it makes it more real. It helps the user of that environment understand it a little bit better and gives a direct visual feedback that is it's certainly better than just, you know, the lines and boxes sort of approach.
Well, speaking of gaming engines or game genres, so we started off with the first person, but then the second rendition of the game, we moved to more of the I would say sim style. So the idea is that you would see sort of a god view in terms of what the repercussions are of your decisions versus running around and playing an avatar. And now what we're doing, what we see is the opportunity to stretch process optimization games is the idea of using a multiplayer real-time strategy gaming engine as a means to effectively create an environment such that the byproduct of the gameplay cranks out a new process. So now instead of just using games to help explain the value of business process management, you're actually using games as the mechanism for optimizing the process.
So very interesting concept. So let's kind of circle it back to the notion of twiddling the bits to see what happens,
yeah.
Right? Because in game environments, that's allowed and expected. I mean, you know, people driving through Vice City, you know, will try to do things that perhaps the game designers hadn't intended because precisely they could and they want to see. So in that kind of a very open mode, how do you use the gaming engine and the underlying logic for optimizing the process to filter out the, hey, I'm trying some wacky things versus, okay, here's the best process that has been exposed through gameplay. How does that work?
The idea is that with a game like this, you want to synthesize what is really, really important about the process. Because, you know, we all know there's a deluge of data out there. And if you've got too much happening, it's hard to really be able to gauge what's important. So the idea would be to create a gaming environment such that the process that is being shown is of the topmost priority, has the amount of data associated with it that you can synthesize through a game.
Sure.
And then the idea would be that if you're using a game for process optimization, you start to integrate real data feeds associated with that process. Like, you know, if it's a logistics optimization game, you know, where is your stuff? What is the cost for moving the stuff? What is the estimated time of arrival for the different stuff? And the idea would be that, you know, as you play through different events within the game, which of course can also be user generated, the idea is that you're effectively creating a process on the back end and changing rules associated with that process.
Mm-hmm. So there's a whole series of variables then really that you could say, well, you know, how much time is spent on a certain area of the process that really kind of teases out this is an important element of
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, that when people monkey around with a certain characteristic, then that's another signal that there's been a lot of attention placed there. There's an optimization opportunity.
Or you can even, you know, I was alluding to user-generated events. Imagine if you have an underlying process that is being stress tested by users. So let's throw Hurricane Sandy at this process. You know, can our process withstand that kind of hurricane where this is down and that is down and the other is down? You know, can our supply chain still work under these kinds of conditions?
Right.
I think there's something incredibly powerful with that approach.
So speaking of the hurricane, and you know, I've been thinking quite a bit about our colleagues and friends that are in the Northeast and what they're going through right now, because it's not been a happy situation for people in New York, New Jersey, and other areas there.
Agreed.
I'm wondering, because I was thinking about this too, the location-based software that is in place on so many people's mobile phones as people are, you know, wandering around trying to find a place to hook up, you know, and get some power. You know, if there wasn't a instant crowdsourcing game kind of opportunity, I hadn't thought about this until just now. You know, like we're
this always happens with you.
Yeah, well, but think about it. You know, so I love checking in on Foursquare. It's one of the things I enjoy doing, right? And I keep my circle of friends kind of small, but there are others that are extremely broad on this sort of thing. I can imagine that all of a sudden there's a very intelligent piece of information that describes, okay, here's how far you're going to have to walk in order to get to a power source. Mm. You know, and those that can be exposed, you know, through these quasi social slash game environments like a Foursquare.
I agree.
Have you given any thought, and I mean, sorry, I'm just noodling on this right now, any thought to any other game opportunities that something like a hurricane like this presents for us? How do we game a hurricane in its aftermath, you know, and how can that help people?
Certainly, disaster response is a natural.
Yes.
Using a real-time strategy gaming engine, something where you'd be able to vet processes with all the different agencies, all the different organizations that need to work together, given what the heck is happening on the ground. And if you have real data feeds, even better. I think that's a natural. I like the idea of crowdsourcing info. It brings me back to an earlier conversation we'd had about Will Wright's Hive Mind.
Yes.
Game
yes.
engine, the yes. idea of having micro quests out on the street and being able to surface user-generated information that could be, you know, used for the power of good, quote unquote.
Well, right, and why not, right?
You
know, many people, I mean, you're hearing these reports on the radio, it's not that people are out shopping necessarily. They're out to buy some water. They're out to get to the FEMA support sites so that they can collect a few of the meals ready to eat, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So why not have some quests like that that then get fulfilled, right?
Mm-hmm.
That help to identify for people where things are.
Agreed.
Yeah, so many folks are so reliant on their smartphones right now, and with towers being out and things like that, this could be a very intelligent way to help direct individuals, families, organizations to where the people are and where the resources are to help make that faster and easier.
Agreed.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Logistics games also, you know, in addition to disaster response, managing of logistics, the whole supply chain, you know, when something like a Sandy comes along or the tsunami in Japan, you know,
or Haiti was another one.
Whole supply chains are disrupted. So, you know, if there was a way to game that before an event like this happens, you know, that could be incredibly useful. I mean, just think of the cost savings.
Sure. If the resiliency that's exposed in the supply chain network can be exposed early enough that allows the decision making that when the event happens.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm, and then you can vet that through a game with all the partners. So it's not just the core organization having the visibility in terms of a plan on what to do if one of these things happen, but you're actually using a platform like this to vet it with everybody who'd be involved.
Right. And then I think the further thought, at least in my mind, is how you visualize that, right? Because so much of this is, people are visual creatures, and how do you understand and see this, right? You know, our traffic light things, our dashboard things, our map things, you know, that's another challenge, that the sea of data has to be simplified to a point that lets you, you know, do the Grey's Anatomy, not the TV show, but the book, you know, where you can peel away the layers of skin and put them back on and put them back on in different orders.
Agreed.
Like today, I heard a session on the radio about a guy who had done a mapping of the New York City subway system for which lines were still inoperable and out of order because he just took it on himself to do it. And as it turned out, his assessment was relatively correct once the MTA had kind of published their own version of the map, you know, to say here's what's available, here's what
isn't.
How
awesome is that?
But you know, that was interesting from a person to the entity and back and forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that one person can make a difference like this now too is also pretty cool.
And now he can put it on his resume and get hired.
Yeah, probably so. Isn't that cool?
It was very cool. That's good. That's a good story.
Well, it's a little bit of a short show today, but I guess is there anything you have for your final throw?
Process optimization games are a hot, hot, hot topic. If you take a look at Gartner, both Gartner and Forrester are saying that by 2015, 50% of organizations that are focusing on process optimization are going to be looking towards games and ways of gamifying processes. So this is going to be big, people. Watch this space.
Yeah, well, that's why we're talking about it. So my saving throw is about immortality.
So
Michael Hugos, who's a friend of yours and mine, has recently published a book, and we'll be reaching out to him here shortly to see if he might be inclined to come talk with us about enterprise gaming, because that's the title of his book. We'd had a conversation with him years ago, and the one of the things we explored in his book, and he reminded me of it when I read it in the book, was this notion of immortality. And so things like this podcast, things like the digital breadcrumbs that we leave everywhere, provide an opportunity for immortality. Is a strong word, but it when you think about the advances we're going to see in artificial intelligence going forward, and all the digital breadcrumbs that we've left everywhere on the web, our Twitter feeds, Facebook, pictures we've taken, things that we've said and done, you can see where an artificial intelligence engine could consume all of that information and then provide at least a degree of insight that you could say, well, what would Michael think about such and such of a problem? You know, it might provide an answer to what would Steve Jobs do.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it in those terms too. So it's a very intriguing concept that we kicked around with Michael some time ago, and I think it's entirely still relevant, and probably even more so when you think about the confluence of AI and all the things that we're leaving for future generations to hear and see.
I would agree. In fact, this topic of immortality has been coming up more and more in the military. There's conversations about the silver tsunami. That's how it's being worded or coined today. And how is it, especially when it comes to processes, knowledge of processes, how can that be captured before that tsunami hits?
Yes. Yeah. So we're right back to the start of our show.
I know. Right back. It's a circle. It's a circle. The circle of life.
I love it. Well, Michael, we're missing you. We hope you feel better soon.
Yes, Michael. We're thinking of you.
And I think we will close for today, and we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for joining. Please continue to collaborate with us on Twitter, Facebook, every which way you can. Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and you can follow us at Twitter at GamesAtWork_BIZ. We'd like to thank the guys at Zebes Systems for their rocking version of the Moon Patrol game theme.